Through a series of unusual happenings, I found out what has happened to Trish. And no, we no longer have Trish.
Valerie Haynes Alvarez is the great aunt of 26-year-old Trish Haynes. She's been doing her own investigation into this case for the last year, and she's frustrated.
The investigators have given us almost no information.
On condition of anonymity, another family member tells News 9 Investigates that a victim's advocate from the Attorney General's office informed that person last year that Trish Haynes is dead. That family member said Trish's remains were recovered inside a washing machine pulled from Grants Pond in Grafton in September. Val says she was more like a grandmother to Trish. The two were close.
She was a lovely person. We loved her dearly. I miss her terribly. This has affected the family in ways that I wouldn't have even expected that it would.
An all-out search for Trish Haynes started last August after the family filed a missing persons report. Val says they hadn't heard from Trish since April. They say when Social Security benefit checks were cut off and she still didn't surface, they knew something was wrong.
Investigations, I know, are very tricky. I know that we don't want to hinder the investigation. I just know that I want to make darn sure that the investigation is still going on.
Childhood friend Ashley Smith told News 9 last year Trish had stayed with her a couple of months before she was reported missing. Smith's home on Main Street in Grafton was searched.
I woke up to a knock on the door. I was all excited about my kids' first day of school, getting them ready, and a bunch of officers just showed up.
News 9 spoke briefly with Doug and Ashley Smith for this story. They live in Warner now. Last year, she indicated she was very concerned about where Trish was.
Hopefully, Trish will see this and she'll come out and show the public that she's fine.
Are you worried about her?
I'm worried sick about her.
Faith Partridge and her husband helped in the search for Trish Haynes last year. She says she met the young woman at this Danbury home last spring. It was also searched as part of the investigation. Partridge describing her as disheveled and making no eye contact.
Did she talk with you?
She did not. She always looked at the floor.
Faith says she and her husband left. She regrets not intervening.
Have you been questioned as part of this investigation?
Yes. My husband and myself were both brought in and questioned by the state police.
What was that like?
Not fun. Not just the family needs answers, but the community needs answers. We all need closure.
For News 9 Investigates, Amy Covino, WMUR News 9.
Well, the family says they want to keep the case in the public eye. They are planning a memorial rally outside the State House in Concord September 6th.
Welcome to the Catch My Killer podcast, and thank you for listening. This is Mark. Since 2015, I have written a weekly column about unsolved homicides and crime for the Claremont Sun in Ohio. Before discussing this week's episode, I would like to take a minute and ask for your support. I am looking for listeners to help support the podcast by buying me one $5 cup of coffee every month. This will help cover expenses that go with producing a successful podcast. If you can help, please visit catchmykiller.com and click on the donate link or on the buy me a coffee link. And if you cannot donate to the podcast, you can still help by sharing these stories with your friends and families through word of mouth and social media. Many of these cases could be solved if the right person provides a crucial tip. And that's enough of the coffee business. This week's story appeared on an episode of ID Discovery's Still a Mystery. It was featured on episode 11, season 2, about the story of a young woman who was murdered and then dismembered. Her name was Trish Haynes. Trish Danielle Haynes was a 25-year-old woman who became involved in a domestic abuse relationship. The couple lived together in a New Hampshire town called North Woodstock. The relationship was often violent. A former employer said Trish often had cuts and bruises on her body. The boyfriend even once forced her to shave her head. The couple dated off and on between 2014 and 2017. After 3 years, Trish contacted the police and filed a complaint against her abusive boyfriend. He begged her to drop the charges. She gave in and agreed to drop them. Unfortunately, by dropping the charges, the police charged Trish with filing a false police report. Trish had returned to Florida to stay with her grandmother, Sandy, who had raised her. Trish was then summoned to court in New Hampshire to face charges for the false police report. Trish returned to New Hampshire and stayed with a friend named Becky who lived near Cardigan Mountain State Park. Although the scenery was beautiful, remote, and peaceful, Trish got restless and wanted to leave. She reconnected with a former classmate named Ashley Smith, who lived in Grafton, New Hampshire with Doug Smith, her spouse. The Smiths offered Trish a place to stay while she waited for her court date. On January 28, 2018, Becky gave Trish a ride to Citgo Gas Station to meet with Ashley and Doug. Trish left with the Smiths and returned to their home. Unfortunately, no one would ever see Trish alive again. In September 2018, law enforcement found some of Trish's remains inside a combo washer and dryer unit in Grants Pond. Someone had murdered and then dismembered her. During the investigation, law enforcement learned Ashley and Doug Smith both had lengthy criminal records. Ashley has been convicted of multiple theft charges, falsifying legal documents, and a charge of filing a false report after she claimed the chief of police assaulted her, stole her gun, and took her money. She's had 6 children since leaving high school and doesn't have custody of any of them. And Doug Smith is a registered sex offender after a 2009 sexual assault. Law enforcement quickly descended on the Smith home, looking for evidence of the grisly crime. Today, Ashley and Doug Smith are both considered persons of interest in Trish's murder. It's believed that Trish Haynes died on May 18, 2018. In March 2018, law enforcement arrested Doug and Ashley Smith for theft by deception and receiving stolen property. In December 2019, Doug was charged with tampering with public records and voter fraud after he registered and voted in both Grafton and Danbury. Today, he remains incarcerated. Since Trish's death, witnesses have come forth and given their accounts of how Trish was tortured and abused while staying with the Smiths. One witness said the Smiths beat Trish and forced her to take care of their children and kept her social security checks. Several witnesses have claimed Trish was beaten, trafficked for sex, and many other atrocities. A friend of the Smiths said Trish was always at the residence, but then one day she vanished. Ashley claimed Trish had run off to another state with an unknown man. If you look into the backgrounds of Ashley Smith, formerly Ashley Ruff, and Doug Smith, you will find many details about their criminal past. For this story, I spoke to Trish's cousin Carrie, her great aunt Valerie, and Chloe, who knew both Ashley Smith and Trish. Let me go ahead and start off by asking you about Trish. Tell me about Trish's childhood.
She was born to Megan. Megan is actually my cousin, and Trish is my second cousin. So Trish is Megan's daughter. Megan was a troubled teen herself. She tried to raise Trish. Eventually, Sandy, my aunt, raised her. She got full custody of her, and they had raised her from that point on. And while she was with Sandy and Steve, her grandparents, she was just the happiest child, always laughing and smiling. And yeah, she was a joy to be with and around, and she was funny, made you laugh a lot.
Now, what about when she became a teenager? How were those years?
Yeah. She still did well in school. She had her grandparents, and she loved them, and she was happy with them. And her dad was nowhere to be seen.
Did she end up ever having any type of alcohol or drug issues, or did she stay away from that stuff?
No, I think she was a typical young teen adult. And I want to say that she would drink, but she was never into the drug scene. She didn't really want that type of life. She knew the direction she wanted to go in. But like any other young coming into age, you're going to experiment with a drink here and a drink there. And maybe she got drunk a couple times. We do when we're growing up, but it was not a problem. And as she got older, the only thing she ever really drank was a Red Bull. It wasn't a drug or alcohol thing that led her down the path.
Sounds to me like she was your basic teenager, probably like you. We like to experiment, get in trouble, and just do teenage stuff and rebel against mom and dad. It's pretty typical stuff.
The normal teenager.
Right. So tell me about your relationship with Trish.
I'm 17 years older than her. And as a typical teenager, I didn't really have a whole lot of interest in this new cousin that has come into the world. She was adorable. And when she was around, I'd love to play with her and stuff, but I just had my own thing going. So it wasn't until my mid-20s that I got reacquainted with Trish. And we didn't hang out. She was like 7 or 8 years old. So it wasn't like we were close, but she was still there. And when she got older, I followed her on social media like every other young adult. And we'd keep track of each other and say happy birthday and touch base and just keep in touch that way. It's not a close relationship, but we were always in each other's lives.
She's still a family member. You still love her, and you had been around her when she was a baby. I had read that she got involved in a domestic violence relationship. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, I can tell you a little bit. Not too familiar with the whole situation, just what I've learned over these past few years. And that is this guy, they actually moved here from Florida together and ended up north, close to the Canadian border, where they were working in a restaurant together. And this guy was possessive, very jealous. He thought she was cheating on him and made her shave her head, this beautiful, long, thick, dark hair, and he made her shave it all off. And it wasn't until later, after she was gone, we realized it was him who made her do that. And we found out because, you know, a friend said he made her cut it off because he thought she was cheating on him. But there were other incidents where he would hit, push. He choked and also held a knife to her throat. And after the choking incident, she was so distraught. It scared her. She couldn't have anything tight around her neck because it would just send her into a PTSD type of situation, and she couldn't handle it. And it was at that point where she just couldn't deal with it anymore and called the police. So the police arrested him. And when he was able to get in touch with Trish again, he said, if you go through with this, I'm going to end up back in prison. She had no idea that he had been in prison before, but she felt bad and reversed the charges or dropped the charges. And that's when she was arrested because she was charged with filing a false report.
After going through all this, I read that she moved to Florida.
She ended up going back to Florida and living with my aunt, her grandmother. She stayed with Sandy until her court date. And that's what brought her back here. She was waiting for her court date. I think it was rescheduled twice. And that's because she had no intention of living here. She was just coming to take care of this charge and do whatever the court made her do. They said she might have to spend a month in jail to clear up the charges. And so she came here to take care of the charges. She didn't want anything hanging over her head. She was always a good girl. You didn't want that on her record. So she ended up living with a friend in northern New Hampshire. And because it was so far, she had no cell service. She then ended up with suspect one and suspect two. And that was the last we saw or heard.
What about the boyfriend? Did she move on from him? And from what I understand, after a postponement, she ended up stuck in New Hampshire.
She never saw him again. She went to Florida to get away from this guy and wait for her court date. She came back to go to her court date, but they postponed it. And so she had to find someplace to live. She had no intention of being here for that long. She had already bought her plane ticket to go back, but because of the postponement, she needed a place to stay.
It sounds like she should have just pressed charges against her ex. It might have saved her life. She sounds like a really good girl who just got mixed up with some bad people. I watched the ID program about this story. I think she was lured in for her disability payment. And according to witnesses, she was sexually trafficked. When did you become concerned about her welfare?
I want to say it was in March, April. She was supposed to go to her court date and she didn't. Yeah, I think it was in April. She missed her court date. And the whole reason she was here was to go to her court date. So that was one red flag. When we discovered who she was staying with, the couple, the family, my aunt, was reaching out to them almost daily. Where is she? I want to talk to her. And they just kept giving like one excuse after another. She ran away. She doesn't want to talk to you. She's in Vermont or whatever the story was, the flavor of the day. It was ridiculous. But it was probably in late May, early June when we decided, because she has PTSD from a childhood trauma, we decided to cut her Social Security benefits off. And when she didn't surface to find out what happened to her income, we knew it was really bad. So the police were called, and that was in July when they finally listened. And
from what I understand, the police discovered your cousin was dead, and they didn't say anything to the public, but they told your grandmother. They asked her not to say anything because they didn't want her to jeopardize the case. Is this what led to the public and other family members learning about Trisha's death?
Yeah, it was actually her and Megan who found out. But Sandy came here to give DNA sample so they could test results from remains they found and to make the identification.
Can you tell me the circumstances about how she was found and where she was found?
The circumstances are she was found in a washer, actually. Some of her remains were found in a washer-dryer combo that was dumped in a pond in Grafton, New Hampshire, not far from the couple's house that she was staying in. They searched the property. They searched another location that they found out she had been staying or was seen at, as well as the female equation parents' house, because they had a farm with pigs on it. So that was a big area of interest to the police as well. Nothing was found other than what was in the washer dryer combo.
Nothing else has ever been found?
Nothing we're aware of. When we ask questions, we get this as an active investigation.
But you were able to have a funeral though, correct?
There was a small remembrance in Florida. There wasn't anything big for Trish.
For this part of the story, I spoke to Chloe French, who knew Ashley Smith, and Trish from school. I wanted to speak to Chloe to get a better idea of Ashley Smith's past, who was one of the last people to be seen with Trish Haynes before she was murdered and dismembered. I was told you didn't really know Trish, but you went to high school with her. Can you tell me about your relationship?
Right. So I wouldn't say we did have a relationship other than same school, same grade. We did have one class together back in middle school, I believe it was. But we definitely hung out in two different crowds. I knew who she was. I knew the people she hung out with. But as far as communicating, it was limited, just passing in the hallways.
So you and Trish didn't hang out with the same people?
Right. She was friends with Ashley Ruff back when we were in high school. And I wasn't really associated with Ashley, so just different circles.
How well did you know Ashley and Doug? To clarify, is Ashley Ruff and Ashley Smith the same person?
Yes, Ashley Ruff is her maiden name. So Ashley, now Smith, but at the time Ruff, and I, we were born same month, same year, same town. So I have known her since elementary school all the way through 12th grade. I felt bad for her growing up. She came from a rough childhood. She had a difficult upbringing. She was always, you know, in and out of trouble, small, stupid stuff, nothing huge, but in trouble for lying, for stealing, for mouthing off to teachers. She was always just someone that I was aware of and I felt bad for, but I also stayed away from her. And again, I come from a very small town where everyone knows everyone. Everyone talks about everyone. And my entire life being brought up, her mom was referred to as Crazy Wendy. Stay away from Crazy Wendy. So my entire life, I was aware of who she was. We came in contact multiple times, but we did not really hang out outside of school.
Can you then tell me about their past? Don't they both have extensive criminal records?
Yes. Like I said, she had a rough upbringing. Doug, on the other hand, he came from a nice home, a nice family. And from day one, he's been off. There was something wrong with him. He was never in school with us. He was always in school for troubled kids. The trouble he was getting into started back when he was a kid, and it was serious trouble. He had rape allegations against him when he was younger. There was talk saying he did to family members that he was never officially charged for. But since day one, he's been a problem for that family. Once Ashley and him got together, which I believe was not too long after we graduated high school, I think she might have been about 19 when they got together. That's when her criminal career really took off. They were involved in different thefts. There are some gun charges that they both have. She was charged a few times for falsifying legal documents. That I don't know the specifics of it. I just know she does have that charge a few times on her record. And when they got together, it was a very toxic, dangerous situation.
They were like a modern day Bonnie and Clyde.
They're not very intelligent people, but they are intelligent when it comes to being a criminal. They know how to cover their tracks, and they don't have jobs. So they have all the time in the world to sit around and think of how to be one step ahead of the police, because that's all they do. You know, their children were all removed from their home back in 2018. They're not your everyday people who go to work and help out society and contribute. They lie, steal, they cheat, and that's who they are as people.
That's definitely not a pretty picture. It sounds like they're dangerous people.
Absolutely. And the fact that Doug Smith is a convicted sex offender, and Ashley Ruff, knowing that, chose to bring him into her home and have children with him, that says a lot right there in itself. She has no regard for anyone besides herself. And just like her mother, they care about one thing only, and that's themselves.
That's actually common with many criminals.
For instance, I saw the episode of ID Still a Mystery episode that they featured this story.
Yeah.
And from what I understand,
law enforcement considers the Smiths as the primary suspects in
killing and dismembering Trish.
Do you agree with their assessment and believe they could be involved?
100%. There's no question in my mind. And something to be noted is that nobody besides Ashley and Doug Smith have ever been mentioned as the last people that Trish was seen alive with. Any news article related to this story specifically mentions Doug and Ashley Smith. Furthermore, the only places that have been searched in that investigation is directly related to Doug and Ashley Smith, whether they lived there, whether they rented from there, whether it was a place that they frequented. Every place that was searched or that was part of that investigation was directly related to Ashley and Doug Smith.
Have you spoken to either one of them lately?
No. The last time that Ashley and I had any conversation was, I believe, the summer of 2019. She attempted to put a restraining order against me for slander on about the page I started. And we did have a court date, and everything was dropped because it was proof I'm not slandering. I'm sharing public knowledge. I'm sharing those news articles. So after that, I did back away from her. She's aware that since Trisha was reported missing, I was against her, that I felt she did something wrong and that I felt that it was her fault that Trish was missing. So she does not go out of her way to contact me. She really stays away from me, as I do with her. Doug Smith, I do not have any contact with him. He's currently in prison at the moment on unrelated charges, but we do not have contact. He is someone who I would never have contact with on my own choice.
I know Doug is currently locked up, but what is Ashley Smith doing these days?
She's living in the Lebanon area, New Hampshire, still doesn't have a job. Still does not have any of her children. They are all either in foster care or in the care of the state. They are not in her custody. She's not working. She recently was dating a guy who was a little younger than her in that area. And he actually reached out to me because when he started dating her, she went by the name of Ashley Ruff. So he had looked into her and didn't see anything about her. But one day she got a piece of mail and she had left it at his home and he saw the name Ashley Smith. And when he Googled that name, he found her priors, found all of the links that listed Trish Haynes as being last seen alive with Ashley, and he got nervous. He reached out to me and I added him to the page so he could see for himself that what I had and what I thought of her, and then ended the relationship with her. I couldn't tell you what she was up to right now other than laying low. My thought process is if she's not going to be arrested right away, I want her to be uncomfortable in public. I want her to feel that everyone's eyes are on her, and I want everyone to have their eyes on her. The more eyes on her, in my opinion, the safer everyone around her is.
After listening to the details of Ashley and Doug Smith, I then went back to Carrie to hear her final thoughts about the death of her cousin.
So how is mom and the aunt, how are they handling that? Are they at the point where they just don't even want to talk about it?
They definitely want to know. They want to know. I think my Aunt Sandy has a very bad heart and some health issues that when she gets to a point where she's emotional and like a raw nerve, anything can just set her emotionally. So I try to be very delicate and not forceful, I guess, with the information that I ask for or that I share with her. I go at her pace. But Megan, she too has a very hard time. I just have a hard time reading, you know, where she is. So I think this is what led to her issues, that I know she's hurting. How could you not? Even if you didn't raise your child, you still had her, and there's going to be some connection, I think.
Sure, it's her mom. Unfortunately, there's probably regrets.
Yeah.
What's going on with the investigation now? Did you all keep in touch with the police?
I, for the first time in 3 years, finally have an appointment to see the attorney general this week. I don't know if anything's going to come of it, but at least we've got some face time. My husband is a retired police chief, so he and another friend of ours, who is also retired law enforcement, and they're going to start looking into the case some more. He has a connection with the lead investigator. So we're at this pivot point right now where we think things are going to start taking off a little more. Unfortunately, I think that the lack of experience with law enforcement left this situation floundering for so long. There's really not been anybody to say, hey, we know what is supposed to happen here, so let's get on the ball. We want regular communication. We want to know what's going on. Do your jobs. And I hate to say that because I have a lot of respect for law enforcement, but I just think that the squeaky wheel is going to get the attention that is deserved.
You're right. And what you're telling me, it's not unusual. I hear it a lot. It's not like TV. A murder happens and they're kicking down doors. The reality is that the only people who can help you are the police. You have to rely on them for help. So justice hinges on what they do. This case seems solid. It can be solved.
I know it does. There are so many people who have witnessed, who have come forward with accounts, like first-person accounts of what happened, what they saw happen to Trish, and torture, the abuse. I don't understand how you can go to this one place and then disappear and nothing come of it.
She didn't dismember herself.
No, she didn't put herself in that little washer dryer combo, and she didn't dump it in the pond.
Now, I know that you've spoken to your local media. Have you reached out to the national media?
As far as national news, no. I've tried connecting with Nancy Grace, and I just haven't heard back, and honestly feel like it's just not sensational enough to get that kind of attention. For us, it's sensational, but getting it across that way, which is why my Facebook, I've just been like plastering a little blurb of it everywhere on social media. I just want justice. Trish deserves it, but more so for my aunt, for Megan, for the family, everyone who loved her. I just feel we need that. She needs that.
It sounds to me like you are doing an excellent job of getting this story out.
I have to give credit where credit is due. And Chloe and Val were on this from the very beginning. And it wasn't until this past year, I'm back in New Hampshire. And as soon as I got back, I reached out and I said, okay, I'm here. I have connections. I have an entire police connection through Jim. We need to do more. I think we're going in the right direction and momentum is starting to pick up.
And the last question that I would have for you is, for anyone out there that's listening, if they know anything about what happened to your beloved cousin, what would you say to that person or persons?
I'm sorry. It's so emotional. I would say, for the love of God, please just be her voice and tell us what happened.
For the conclusion of this story, I spoke to Trish's great aunt, Valerie Alvarez. Valerie has been vocal about getting justice for her niece. She has told me she will continue doing interviews and contacting law enforcement until she sees Trish's killers go to prison. Whenever you are ready, please tell me about your relationship with your niece, Trish.
I was there the day Trishy was born. Within a few hours after she was born, I had gone to visit her at the hospital. I was in a relationship at the time that both the man I was with and me, we had a close relationship with Trish. Trish was my brother's granddaughter. My brother had died when he was 30, so I was the next one in line to fill in on that side of the family and thought of her as my granddaughter. She was a beautiful child. She was smart, intelligent, fun. She learned things quickly. I used to take her shopping and play with her at the beach. And whenever I had a chance, I took her and was involved in her life up until she was probably 5 or 6. And then I moved away and I was not there as often. They moved to North Carolina and then I had come to New Hampshire. They ended up moving to New Hampshire. So there was another period in her life between 7 and 9 when they were living in New Hampshire and I was home. I go to Florida in the wintertime. But when I was in New Hampshire, I would take her, and oftentimes on Sunday, I'm one of Jehovah's Witnesses, I would pick her up and I taught her whatever I could about God and the Bible and gave her a little spiritual need that followed her through her life, even though she had troubled life. She, you know, was always looking for love in the wrong places as she was getting older. The later part of her teenage years, I didn't see her as much. I was in Florida and then New Hampshire, and so I really was not right in her life during those years when she had a series of boyfriends, and I don't know if she's ever had a boyfriend that was not abusive, unfortunately. Got her into more trouble than what they were worth. Then she ended up with the one boyfriend that she had, the last one. She moved up here with him probably in 2015-16. And then he ends up being abusive, but she did not want to leave him and didn't leave him for a while. And then when she finally got him arrested for abuse, he made her recant the story because he said, if you don't recant the story, I'm going to go back to prison. He had been in prison before for an assault. So she recanted the story, and then the North Woodstock police said, do not recant the story, because if you do, we're going to have to arrest you for filing a false police report. And they couldn't talk any sense into her, so that's what she ended up having as a charge, filing a false police report in 2017. So at the end of 2017, after she did all that, they still did not stay together. They filed against her. She had gone to Florida to stay with her grandmother for a few weeks. And at the end of 2017, I think she left Florida December 16th, knowing she needed to come back to New Hampshire and get it wiped off her record. They told her she'd probably end up spending 7 days in jail for having that charge against her. She came back up here, and apparently the court case got delayed until April. She was up here with no place to stay. She went to stay with one really a nice lady who happened to live on a farm on top of a mountain, and it had no cell service. The lady walked all the time, so Trish was there all day long with nobody around and nobody to talk to, and her cell phone didn't work. So she had contacted Ashley Ruff, who she had met in school. Trish needed a place to stay and happened to find Ashley on Facebook. They reconnected, and she ended up going to stay with Ashley, and we never saw her again. Trish had Social Security on disability because she had PTSD from, you know, her childhood, and she'd gotten hit in the head a couple of times and had concussions. They were accidental. They were playing baseball with a little boy once, and he hit her in the head with a baseball bat, and she got a concussion. She ended up on disability for PTSD. So she, at Ashley's place, I'm not here in New Hampshire because it's in the middle of the winter, and then all of a sudden her phone's not working. She doesn't have a phone any longer, which is totally unlike Trish. Apparently they had taken her phone, and she had no communication. We really never talked to her again after she got to Ashley's in January. And then sometimes she'd call from Ashley's phone, and they'd say, oh, well, we can't talk on the phone until we get to town. And Ashley was like always right there. So there was no real communication. Trish was supposed to go to court in April. We kept saying her plan was she was going to go to court. If she had to spend 7 days in jail, she'd do that. And in the middle of April, she would go back to Florida to stay with her grandmother. With no communication, we didn't really know. So then April comes, and there's still no word from Trish. And so we start really worrying about her, wondering what's going on. And we'd call Ashley, and Ashley would lie. Oh, she went to Vermont. She's not here. There was just like one lie after another. So we started getting suspicious. And when I came back to New Hampshire in the middle of May that year, I started looking for Trish to see if I could find her. We knew they lived in Danbury or Grafton, New Hampshire. Stanley didn't even know Ashley's last name, so that made it difficult. So I went over into Danbury. There's a general store over there. I went over with Trish's picture. You know, people at the store said no, they hadn't seen her. And I just said, well, do you know a girl by the name of Ashley with five kids? And nobody knew who that was. And we just never, I didn't know what her last name was. So how am I going to find this person to see? And then I contact Ashley, and she says, oh, she's going to be here Friday. And then Friday would come and go and no word. On Monday, I called Ashley again, and I said, Ashley, you said Trish was going to come. And she's, oh, she came just for a few minutes, and she wouldn't call you. And I said, how did she get there? And she said, I don't know, somebody brought her. And I said, did you look out the window to get a license to figure out who she's with? And she said, oh, no, but I will the next time she comes. Well, then there was never any next time. Then I told Sandy, I said, we'd better stop her Social Security check because, looking back up, when I got here to New Hampshire, one of the other things that I did was to contact the authorities to find out if they'd seen her up in North Woodstock, Lincoln, New Hampshire. That's where she had been. I also contacted the court, and they said she never went to court. She never made her court date. So now what is she doing? Is she hiding out? Because she didn't make her court date and she doesn't want to go to jail for longer. Is she hiding or do we file a missing person report? Finally, one day, Sandy, the grandmother, got in touch with Ashley, and Ashley broke that story saying, oh, Trish doesn't want to have anything to do with her family. She said her grandmother takes her money and makes her do all the work in the house, and she didn't like being around her grandfather. And we all knew it was a lie because Trish loved her grandparents. She just adored both of them. I said, that's not right. So then Sandy says to Ashley, the next time she calls, Ashley, you tell Trish, if she does not want to have anything to do with the family, that I want to hear that out of her mouth, not out of your mouth. You tell her to call me and tell me that herself. She said, but if she does not do it by Monday, I am going to file a missing person report. Ashley said back to her, if you file a missing person report, I can guarantee you'll never see your granddaughter again. So Sandy hangs up the phone and says, where'd that come from? Up until this point, we thought Ashley was still a friend of Trish. Anyway, Sandy, I'm not going to wait until Monday. I'm going to file a missing person report, which she did through the Stewart, Florida. Now, she called North Woodstock Police and told them that she was filing a missing person report and to stop the Social Security check, because if they stop the Social Security check and that's all that Trish has to live on, then she's going to come out at least to Social Security and say, hey, where's my money? When the 1st of July came and there was still no word from Trish, I knew there was something seriously wrong. Somebody either had taken her into human trafficking or something had happened to her. From then on, the North Woodstock police did all they could to be investigated it. And then towards the end of August, they did a crime scene. They set up a crime scene right at Ashley and Douglas Smith's house. And it was apparent Ashley and Douglas Smith had done something to her. And from there on, they keep telling us, oh, the investigation is still active. And then people start coming out of the woodwork to me. I wasn't even actively looking for information, but things just started coming at me and realizing they had abused her terribly for the 5 months she was there. A little girl that gave evidence gave us stories of other kids that lived in the house. Another couple lived in the house. And with their kids. So there was like a total of 5 kids. And there was one child that was old enough and intelligent. And she told us stories of abuse Trish went through with these people. And the story is just horrendous. People know things and say things. And then the investigation, they've not done anything to these people. I know investigations are really difficult, but they know who did this and how they did it, and they still have made no arrests. And it's been 3.5 years. We have a lady that's an advocate, and if we have any questions or if we have anything we want to report, we have to give it to her. She takes it to the investigators, and the investigators supposedly look into it. But some of these people said they've never even been, you know, approached. They have never given their information. So we don't know where the case is. We did have a meeting the other day with the state's attorney general that's handling the case, and it was a waste of time. They don't tell you anything. All he said was, it is not a cold case yet. Well, it's been 3.5 years, and you've got all this information and these people that are willing to talk and say different things that they've seen and the abuse that they saw that she went through. And these people that did this, they are like the bottom of the barrel. They're people you'd never want to get involved with. And Trish was not like them. And I think sometimes because of the type of people she ended up being with, that I don't know if they have thought, well, she's just like them and was into drugs and all that kind of stuff. Trish was not taking drugs. I can guarantee you that.
So you were saying law enforcement possibly didn't take the case too seriously since Trish was hanging out with people who had criminal records.
Right. And I seriously think that. And I approached that to the attorney general. Works. He's not the actual top attorney general, but his name is Jeff Stelgis. I approached that subject the other day and I said, you guys think she's like the rest of that bunch of people over there? He denied that. But in the back of my mind, I'm wondering, how are they really pushing? When there is so much evidence, they know that what was in that washer and dryer, they know it was Trish. They know she was killed. They know the last people that saw her. Don't tell me that they can't come up with some kind of a case and get this thing moving. And that's what is so frustrating for us as a family, knowing the abuse she went through for 5 months. This little girl took us back into the house. The house has been sold to somebody else. And the lady was kind enough to let us go into the house with the little girl that witnessed all this stuff. And the little girl took us through different places where she saw Trish and told us different things that she saw happen to Trish. It's a horrific story. And if they don't do something about it, it's like another slap in the face. This criminal justice system, where all the justice goes for the criminals, is a travesty. They are so worried they're going to, you know, step on the toes of one of these murdering criminals that they forget about the victims. They forget about us families who know and have heard about the abuse that our family member has gone through and the murder. The whole justice system is really backwards when criminals have more justice than the victims.
And that concludes the story of Trish Haynes. This is one of the most horrific stories I have ever covered for this podcast. Trish's family loved her dearly. Her Aunt Valerie has been vocal about her frustration over the murder of her niece. There are many witnesses to the abuse that Trish experienced. Today, no one has been charged with her murder. If you have any additional information about this case that could help the family get justice, please contact the New Hampshire State Police at 603-271-3636. And if you would like more information about this case, please visit the Facebook page, Justice for Trish Haynes. I will also provide this information in the story notes. And if you are a parent, law enforcement official, friend, or relative seeking justice for an unsolved homicide case, please visit my website and complete the contact form, or contact me through Facebook. Thank you for listening.